You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Barbara Bachner. Barbara, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hello, yes, I'm here.
So Barbara, let's talk about what you're doing now. I know you're in New York. What's happening in your studio at the moment? What are you working on? I want to go into your history and even how you got into painting initially, because I know that's an unusual story, but what is it that you're working on at the moment or involved
I'm working on some new paintings in my new studio, and what's interesting is that after 20 years in Chelsea, I'm moving next week. I was one of the early Chelsea people before it became Hot Chelsea. I went into a building there in 1995, and now I'm leaving, and Chelsea's a different place from when I arrived. That's definite.
And that building is no longer Artist Studios that you're leaving?
Well, it is Artist Studios, but it's becoming more and more galleries and high-end designers and architects, and, you know, the rent is... really went up, and ordinary artists like myself are more moving out. I mean, people are still there, but it's not that there are no artists there. There are many artists there, but for me, it's no longer an option. And I've moved to a studio that I bought in 1986. I bought a studio apartment on 57th Street in 1986. And other people have been using it and living there, but now I'm back in that studio. So the work that I'm making there is a continuation, but different, of what I've been making for a long time. They're all 36 by 36 canvases. Acrylic on linen, but it's taken a different turn. I've become very interested in the last 5 or 10 years in Alfred Erlen. Do you know his work?
Yes.
And it's affected my painting. So I'm actually making more. I've been an abstract painter for a long time. Objects are coming into my work. Form is coming into my work. It's really changing at this point. I don't think that has anything to do with moving my studio, but that is what is happening.
And how did Erlen affect your work? How did that change your
I saw his work on and off over the years in group shows. I've been interested in him for a long time before he did the computerized paintings and so on. I thought his lack of respect was interesting for the process. And I was trained very traditionally as a painter. And it's always been hard for me to get over the idea of the ideal beauty in a painting. And it's not that it's held me back, but it's kind of controlled me. And when I saw his work, I thought, "Ha! Well, that's interesting. Maybe you can try to bend a few rules here and see what happens." And that's really how it's affected me. It's given me some leeway.
So, in recent work, how has that shown up? What kind of rules are you breaking now?
Well, I'm basically a colorist. I'm very interested in color and good at managing color on paintings. But now I'm going into depth. I've been a painter of flat abstraction for, you know, 15, 20 years. I'm going into depth and accepting modeling and form, you know, three-dimensional form. And layering, and creating deep space, that's what interests me at this time, which is something I haven't done since my early training. And I this is what's happened. I don't know exactly how it's going to turn out. Some days the paintings look really ugly. Mm. But I'm taking a risk. And I think a lot of it came out of looking at that work, not just his work, but in general, the German artists of the 1980s were interesting to me. And I'm not an intellectual painter. That's not what I'm saying. I react to what I put on the canvas. I'm a very visceral kind of painter. And the ideas behind my painting are much less important than the actual physical images that emerge as I paint. But the idea of the freedom to create something that isn't gorgeous is very interesting to me, because the first thing people say when they look at my work, and I think this happens to so many people, what a beautiful painting.
Right.
So I'm getting
getting away from that.
I'm getting away from
that.
I mean, it's not that I want my paintings to be atrocious, but I want them not to be the first reaction when you look at my work. Oh, what a beautiful painting! Because I'm good at making beautiful paintings. I've been doing it for a long time. So,
and what will happen with these current works? Are these, will you exhibit them somewhere? Do you have a gallery at the moment?
No, I don't know where I'm going to be. I've been exhibiting a lot with a great deal with an Italian curator. She's from Milan, and my work's been in Milan, and it was in Berlin at one point, and a little bit in England. I'm holding back from showing with her until I get. I don't have a group of work yet that I'm willing to put up. I did a retrospective of my painting in 2 years ago, and this is a whole different move for me, the kind of work that I'm doing now, and I don't have enough of it, and I'm not far enough in the development to think about showing it. As a solo show, I may try to get it into, you know, a group show here and there, but I'm not ready to do a solo show with it. So I probably will continue, because she invites me into exhibitions. I might show her one or two, but I don't have a body of this new work. I'm working on it.
And to go back a little bit to the beginning of your career, because I know it's an unusual story, how did you get involved in painting?
Well, I grew up in a basically an art-free environment. I grew up in a small, very small city up in northern New England, and I didn't see what you would call fine art was not available to me until I was in my late teens and went away to college, and then my first exposure was magnificent, because what I started looking at was work in the major museums in Boston and in New York, and I was interested in 16th and 17th century European painting. I looked a lot at Rubens and Titian and, you know, the Baroque period especially interested me.
And this was in college. What were you studying while you were looking at these works?
I was studying, first of all, I was initially going to be in business. I was in college studying business and in retailing. And I had no intentions, no option in my mind of being a painter. That would never have occurred to me at that age. So when I became more and more interested in art, I studied art history. I have a degree in art history from NYU, an undergraduate, not a graduate degree. And as part of that, the people who, do you know anything about the Institute of Fine Arts?
I do. Not a lot, though, but I know something about it. But so, yeah. Yeah, explain anything that others might not.
Well, it's the graduate division of New York University in Fine Art, and it's like a hallowed ground. And many of the professors there were teaching undergraduate classes at NYU at the time. So I had this wonderful grounding in art history. But what happened was that I took some...
You mean because you were surrounded by some pretty amazing professors?
Yes. Fabulous. Janssen, who wrote the classic book on art history, was teaching at NYU undergrad at that time. And also the man who began the Islamic section at the Met, Dr. Ettinghausen, he was teaching there. They had wonderful people teaching there. And initially I thought, well, so I'll do a graduate degree, you know, and go to work, get a job and work as an art historian somewhere, because getting a job was always somewhere in the offing. But then I took a few undergraduate studio classes, and I got, I became enamored of the studio. So I never did the graduate work. And I started going to classes at, I wasn't in a formal environment. I had, what did they call it, the classical training in France or anywhere else you were.
In the ateliers or something.
I had an atelier education in painting at the Art Students League and the National Academy of School of Fine Arts. So I was a figure painter, and I briefly thought I might be a portrait painter. It's funny, put me off that was I was not good at the one-on-one with the model. It made me uncomfortable.
Hmm. But the Art Students League, the life drawing classes, you mean?
I worked 2 years in drawing with Robert Beverly Hale. I don't know if he was this classic instructor in drawing at the league. I mean, I was really into that scene. But then I discovered people like Rothko and the Abstract Expressionists, and I left that course, and I worked as a sort of an abstract. I did Abstract Expressionist work for maybe 20 years, but with a personal slant. But the art history was what so I have a deep grounding in art history, which is good and not so good. It's in your head. The very fine skills that you know over the centuries are in your head when you're trying to work. I'm not
right,
saying that...
Because you read everything from Vasari's book forward and understand the craft that's gone into it. That brings us around to kind of the breaking of the rules, which must be freeing for you in that context.
Well, I'm a little, yes, but I worked for a long time before... I don't make conventional looking paintings even before now, but this is the first time I've really hadn't had in my head that those monitors looking at me and saying, "What do you think you're making?" You know?
Right.
And look at this weird looking thing that you're putting out here. So I'm going with that and seeing what happens. Maybe I've worked so long, and I have been at it, you know, for over 40 years. When I think back at my first, the works that I really admired were things like Rubens' Venus and Adonis, or some of Titian's work, and then first of all, nobody's going to do better than that. I knew some very skilled figure painters when I was studying. I wasn't as good as that, and I would never be able to do anything beyond what has been done in figure painting.
Hmm.
it isn't going to happen. So
right.
I'm self-censored in that regard. So I think, I guess what I'm trying to do is something that is natural to me and feels good, and where skill is, of course, skill is required, but that a sense of adventure is just as important.
And after you, yeah, that's what it would seem, that's where you're at now, which seems like to be a great place, that balancing of adventure and experiment.
Right, experiment. You have to have, like, I have a trained hand. You know, I've had all these years of experience behind me in drawing and painting. It's not that it's very hard for me to be crude. Actually, I'm trying to be a little bit crude, really. And I have a friend who paints with her left hand because her right hand is too programmed. Well, I haven't reached that point, but it could happen. That your hand is so accustomed to making certain kind of form and certain kind of elegance. I would say elegance is in there. I'm very good at making fabulous-looking surfaces that are very elegant and attractive and unique. But I'm trying to meld that with this new trend in my work. I can't start painting like a primitive. It's not, you know, it's impossible. I think you can.
But it's almost that desire, right? Because you can't unlearn, obviously, what you know. But like you said, your hand is also self-censoring in a way. It's referencing history in a way that would be nice if it was entirely free of, but can't be entirely, because that is also that is intellectual, even if it's not about that. It's a body of knowledge that you carry with you.
You can't unknow it.
Right.
You know, it's not possible. I think one of the biggest challenges, first of all, I've tried a lot of different things. Media. I've done a little bit of found object sculpture and installation. I've done a little, I had one not too successful foray into video. And prints, I've done prints. But I find that painting is the most personal and the most challenging. You know, there's nothing between you and that surface. If you do sculpture, you always start with something in your hands. There's something in your hands, and a physical thing. So to me, painting is, maybe that's why I now concentrate on painting. It's the thing that stayed with me as the most challenging. And the one that is the most personal to me. So I'm staying with that. But with this new, I'm trying this new tack where I'm not unlearning the past 40 years, but I'm trying to expand and free myself a little bit from the last 40 years. And I'm not sure what will happen, but I have, you know, have you ever heard of the and the NTL attitude, I'm thinking of my new studio space, calling it the NTL studio, the Nothing to Lose studio. What have I got to lose? You know, I have this history behind me of showing and working and whatever. So if this turns out well, good. If it doesn't, well, then it won't.
Well, it was an adventure, as you're saying. It's the adventure, too. It's an adventure. Some adventures are memorable and some less so. But just as you were talking about forays into different, you know, media, but we'll see how the adventure turns out, I imagine.
You know, the hardest thing, I think, for painters or anybody, any artist, you look around you. I mean, the media, there's so much available to you of imagery everywhere, right? So you say, okay, I get a studio, I'm going to be an artist. So what's your next move? What is it that you're going to make? I suppose any career that you go into, you have to make decisions. But I think your parameters, like if I had stayed in business, I mean, I would have gone into some facet of business, retailing or whatever. There are choices to make. What do you want to do exactly? But I think artists look around them and say, what's available is staggering.
Right.
Staggering. You can be any kind of painter. Did you see the show Forever Now at the Metropolitan?
I didn't see that show, no.
Well, I suppose, well, it was mostly, you know, non-figurative. It was non-figurative painting. But the range of work in it, I think, showed how people are not floundering or not desperate. Sometimes I think it's a little bit of desperation trying to make work today. Because there's so much out there of
you mean kind of reaching for new imagery in this, like you're saying, this sea of media to draw on, or?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I go to a show and I say, well, this has an odor of desperation to me. You know, like, how do you make something that hasn't already been made and that six other people aren't already making?
Right.
Or, you know, or 600. I think artists, when you were in the 16th and 17th century, you joined an atelier and you did what was being done. You know, the choices, of course, people made breakthroughs. You have Caravaggio. You have people who really changed things. But they had less choice. You learned how to paint like your master. And if you were really good at it, you made a reputation. Today, we are just out there. You know, what do I do next? That somebody
right.
hasn't already done 16 times, if not more. So I don't want to look desperate. I really don't want to look desperate. But I'm trying to give myself a chance to look different.
Like that. And Barbara, it's been great talking. And there's one other question I'd like to ask. Is there a book you're currently reading that you'd want to share? This could be anything at all, on or off topic, but is anything you're reading of interest to you?
I'm reading. I always read two or three things at once. I'm reading Good Trash at the moment. I'm reading Elmore Leonard. And I just finished a very interesting book by a, well, he's Japanese, but he lives in London. I think he's English, actually. Was born in England. I'll give you the title. It's Kazuo Ishiguro. Have you read Ishiguro?
No, I haven't.
It's called The Buried Giant. And it's a tale from the post-Arthurian era in England. It's a very interesting intellectual book. I also read spy novels.
I like that. What kind of spy novels?
Oh, well,
mysteries,
the great
mysteries. Man.
Mysteries, yeah. The great master. They're doing. Do you watch TV at all? They're doing
some,
a series.
I watch Netflix and Amazon series. I don't have regular TV. They seem to be watching those kind of things.
Well, they're doing a a series called The Night Manager. And I'm trying to remember the name of the writer. He's the great classic spy, John le Carré.
Oh, right.
I read John le Carré and mysteries and a little bit of good trash. And then, you know, I just finished this wonderful book by Ishiguro. And then there's the Japanese writer Murakami I read a lot. So I'm a wide-range reader. I read all kinds of things.
That sounds wonderful. I'm glad you shared those with us. That reminded me of a book I was reading. I don't know if you've heard of it, called The Book of Tea. It's also
the what?
Japanese,
the what? Say it again.
It's called The Book of Tea, T-E-A. And I know that the Metropolitan Museum produced a beautiful little edition of it. But The Book of Tea was also written by a Japanese writer and poet in the 60s, I think. But
how do you spell the third? How do you spell the third word? The book of?
The book of tea, like the kind of tea you drink, T-E-A.
Oh, T-E-A. Oh. So
yeah,
I should look for that?
It actually comes in a nice slip-covered edition. Yeah, you should look. I don't know why I mentioned that, but it seems like for some reason something you would also like. It's a gorgeous little volume and just some of the most elegant writing I've ever read.
Wonderful.
It's beautiful.
I'm going to write it down. And I also read people like James Smiley, you know. I'm kind of like a voracious reader.
And you use real books or Kindle? How do you read?
No, I read real books. So far, anyway. I don't have a Kindle.
Barbara, I want to thank you for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
I enjoyed speaking with you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.